This program is brought to you by Jewel, sous vide by Chef Steps. Jewel takes the guesswork out of cooking. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Kathy Urey. So a few weeks ago, we were talking with Danielle Nierenberg of Food Tank about what were some of the lowest hanging fruits of the specter of food system issues. And she said that would be food waste. So it's something that everyone can do something about in a small way, in a big way, in all kinds of ways. But yeah, so today we're going to talk about one way you can help solve this problem step by step. Maybe not solve it, but do something productive about it. And it's about cooking with scraps, you know, saving some food waste in your own kitchen and in really delicious ways too. I would say it's not like a sacrifice. It's actually a benefit to your cooking. That's because I have a wonderful cookbook called Cooking with Scraps, How to Turn Peels, Cores, Rinds, and Stems into Delicious Meals. And it's also subtitled 85 Scrumptious Recipes for Zero Waste Cooking. Its author is Lindsay Jean Harden. She joins me now from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Lindsay Jean.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining, and I'm a big fan of your book, so congrats. This is like a great book, and it's your first one, right?
It is indeed, thank you.
Awesome. So I know that this book first came about from your column of the same name, Cooking with Scraps, on Food 52. Is that right?
We had an editorial meeting where we had talked about things that we wanted to do, and one of my colleagues had read Gabrielle Hamilton's cookbook Prune, which has a garbage chapter in it. And we were like, I wonder if we could do something with that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have that column. It sounds amazing. So yeah, for a couple years, I would dig into our archives and I would find recipes from the Food 52 community that were making really smart use of food scraps. I would then share that with the rest of the community.
Awesome. And now you've written a book with, is this sort of like the best hits, or is it all like sort of new ideas that you're, or the best? I don't know.
It's new because that I was mostly sharing other people's recipes within that column. And then I obviously learned a lot from all of them during that time. So then I took all of that knowledge and turned it into recipes of my own.
I see. And I love how you have all these like sort of like handy tip sheets throughout, or like, you know, charts and like things like clean out the crisper, you know, sections throughout it. And also just wonderful photography about for the recipes. And, you know, there's like a narrative section on turnips, for instance, and how you can use all parts of it, the greens and whatnot. So it's a really, really fun book. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how, I know that you're in, you got your degree in urban planning, and you've been involved with sustainable sort of food solutions throughout your career. So why did you decide you wanted to be that person to write this column and then eventually this book?
Well, after college, my husband and I moved to Japan for a couple years, and we joined a CSA there for the first time. And so we were getting this weekly box of vegetables that
in Japan?
Had been grown by local. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So we were getting this weekly box of vegetables that had been grown by local farmers, and we would walk down to our neighborhood grocery store to pick it up. But almost every week I had to carry something inside the grocery store because I had never seen it before and had no idea what to be doing with it. So I developed like a much bigger interest in food and cooking, and I really wanted to be like honoring this produce and using it all really well, because, you know, I was aware that the farmers near me were working hard to grow this, and I just felt a bigger connection to my food. Mm-hmm. And then while we were there, a college friend of ours told us that he was starting a company with his wife called Real Time Farms, which was a website designed to help people find food that they felt good about eating. And I didn't even know them that well at the time, but I just felt these bells going off saying, like, I have to be a part of this with you. Hmm. And so we built this startup from the ground up and would help people find farmers markets and learn about their local farmers' growing practices, and eventually connected to restaurants. And so restaurants could then show where they were getting their ingredients from. And it was just a really cool time of connecting food and writing for me. And we had an incredible group of advisors, two of whom were Amanda Hesser and Meryl Stubbs, the co-founders of Food 52. And they eventually acquired us, and a couple of us went on to work for them, where I did multiple different things, but among them that column. So it was just like all of these pieces fit together for me of a love of sustainability and food and cooking and writing. And yeah, it just felt like it was meant to be.
That is really cool. I had no idea. And what was the name of the startup that you did again?
It was called Real Time Farms.
Okay. So helpful. With this book, though, you continue to sort of, this is really CSA friendly, I would say. It's on like having a CSA myself, knowing what to do with all the ends of like the broccoli stem. You know, we have plenty of recipes that, you know, broccoli stems could fit into well, but I never see an actual recipe that says use broccoli stems. So it's like,
it's intended to really be like a helpful reference guide for people, like whether it's coming in your CSA box or you're picking something up at the farmer's market or the grocery store, like presumably you know what to do with the carrot's root, but you might not know how to use the top of the greens.
Exactly. And I love that, you know, you stated in the beginning, you have, it seems, you know, a deep love for many recipes, but you start your book in the introduction with a very bold statement. You say, I don't think there are any perfect recipes. What do you mean by that exactly?
I hope that it's intended to be comforting to people. Mm-hmm. I find it comforting because there are a lot of incredible, iconic recipes out there. And, you know, I make many of the ones that I mentioned in there, like Marcella Hazan's tomato sauce recipe is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But just because it's wonderful as is doesn't mean that it's too special to be played with or tweaked to make it work for your taste. And I think that we should all feel very comfortable playing with our food.
Yeah. So what are some of the most surprising discoveries you made about things that you could use, repurpose from, you know, food scraps, I guess, throughout your writing about it for 2 years and then this book?
I think the most surprising thing was just how much and how, like, how much we can be eating and, like, what we aren't.
Yeah.
And so it really isn't as hard to use them as we think it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes it can feel intimidating, and it really shouldn't, because it's just another ingredient.
Right.
And, yeah, and then there are, like, the really obvious ones. Like, I think banana peels are going to be the biggest shocker for everyone in this book, that they are indeed edible and taste good.
Tell me your secret banana peel techniques.
So in the recipe in the book, it's for a banana peel cake, and I'm cutting up the banana peels, and you want to use the ones that are really ripe and have a lot of spots on them, and then you're cooking them in just a little bit of water to get them to soften up, and then you're blending those together into a puree, and then using that like you might applesauce or some other fruit puree in baking. And it just makes this really light and fluffy cake that's delicious.
Wild. And it has fiber probably too, right? the peels. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Yes. I haven't calculated that, but yes, I would think so too.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people, instead of in addition to not knowing what to do, they might think that cooking with scraps is kind of dull or undesirable or less desirable than the other part of the plant that you were eating. But I think that you do an amazing job of, like, if you will, sexing up some of these ingredients. So, I mean, you have, like, for instance, broccoli stems, you know, they can be coarse or tough, but here you have a lemony olive oil poached broccoli stem and chickpea on ricotta toast. And that just looks amazing. And easy. And then you have, my big shocker when I was reading this is the cheese rind fromage fort.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Cheese rinds. You can do
that? Yeah, they still have so much flavor left in them. And, you know, I think that a lot of us will save them occasionally and use them in a soup or, you know, broth for beans, which is another great use too, but they really can be eaten on their own.
See, I thought I was clever for saving them for soups. I was like, I'm in the know here. But then I didn't realize you could, like, just grind them up and make this wonderful, I guess, cheese ball? Is that what it is, this thing?
It's shown that way in the book, yes.
Oh, okay.
But it can either be a spread or it can be a cheese ball. The texture can be what you'd like it to be.
Well, it's beautiful. I think it's perfect for the holidays, too. I think that it's really fun to have that big cheese ball and then it's covered with herbs here and some sea salts.
Yeah.
And you serve that
with
toast. Perfect
for entertaining.
Awesome. So, Lindsay Jean, there's so many more tips and fun recipes to talk about here, but let's cut to a quick little commercial interlude and we'll be right back chatting more.
This program is brought to you by Jewel Sous Vide. My name is Katie Mosman Wadler. I'm the executive director of HRN and a real-life Jewel user. I use Jewel to help me host the most delicious dinner parties. When you cook with Jewel, there's zero guesswork. So steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, vegetables, and eggs all come out exactly the way you like them. The Paired app is super intuitive and has a great visual dentist guide. Jewel is awesome for prepping many perfect portions, making it easy to cook for a crowd, and it's hands-free so you can focus on entertaining while Jewel does the work. And pro tip, Jewel is also great for travel. I throw mine in my suitcase if I'm headed to a rental house with any kind of uncertain kitchen. From perfect steak to juicy, tender Thanksgiving turkey, Jewel makes the best food you've ever tasted. Just be sure to save some room for mini jars of pumpkin pie. Jewel, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Jewel and use code HRN, as in Heritage Radio Network, to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/JOULE, code HRN.
All right, we're back chatting more with Lindsay Jean Hard. She is the author of Cooking with Scraps, and she's still here, right, Lindsay?
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Great. So, you know, I think that it's really nice that you have this section called Everything in Moderation in this book because, you know, talking about how many food choices we have every day, shopping, it's complicated. And we can't always be a perfect angel. But you share some really great tips here about how to sort of stay conscientious. And I'd just love to hear, like, you know, what do you think is, like, most important to do, in your opinion, or not do?
It's a hard thing, and I think it's going to probably vary by every person, but I think maybe choosing one thing to start with and feeling good about making that choice. So maybe, you know, I think a lot of times greens are probably the easiest place to start, whether it's beet greens or carrot tops. And just starting with one thing and working that into your repertoire and getting comfortable using it.
Right.
And then adding another one and another one.
Mm-hmm. So suddenly seeing the tops of your bunches of beets or whatever as a green that you can cook like any other, maybe Swiss chard or something like that. And then you will sort of more incorporate or identify other things like that too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And Okay, we have to play devil's advocate here. What are some of like the downsides of cooking with the, I don't know, scraps? What should we look out for, be a little bit wary about? If anything, maybe nothing.
I think that you do need to be more conscious about the growing practices,
okay.
Especially if you're going to be using the peels of things.
So yeah.
Like banana peels and the pineapple peels, and especially ones like pineapples that are traditionally grown with a lot of pesticides. In those cases, although I don't always buy organic for everything, I would want to be choosing organic or be able to talk to the farmer about their mm-hmm. growing practices. And as with everything that you eat, you obviously want to make sure that you're washing everything really well, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of pineapples, you know, when you buy a whole pineapple, you have this mountain of stuff on your cutting board left over. This, you know, the peel and then the core too. So what would you suggest doing with those things?
So for those, I actually turn them into a pineapple peel and core lemonade with mint. It still has a lot of that pineapple flavor left with all of those pieces. And so it turns it into a really delicious non-alcoholic beverage,
mm-hmm.
but you can also spike that too if you're so inclined.
So you strain it out and it's like you can use this, you can like make this syrup to use for almost anything you want, right? It sounds like you can just get that, extract that flavor and go with it. Fun. Yeah. So lemon peels, that's something that, you know, we see sometimes in desserts, you know, fancy desserts or maybe cocktails. What are some other tricks for using those up?
I candy the peels in the books,
mm-hmm.
but you could also be zesting your fruits and using that zest to make flavored sugars or salts. I have one recipe that's using grapefruit peel in with a shortbread cookie.
Mm.
You could be freezing it as it is to be adding flavor to other dishes down
later.
The road.
I think
that's one of the most versatile so-called scraps you could have on hand.
Nice. I bet if you were like into like confectionery or like, what am I talking about? Cosmetics. You could also make some essential oils or who knows what. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Because your salts and the flavored salts look amazing. And it looks like it's complicated to do. You know, those fancy, you have these different like sort of like flecks in the salt that are like different colors. But actually, it's tomato skin salt in one variation. And then you have cucumber salts, yellow bell pepper salts, celery salts. And those are just...
Yeah, and they...
Mm-hmm, go on.
They look so much fancier than they are. Like you said, I mean, it just adds a really fun pop of color, but they're incredibly easy to make.
And how do you exactly get them really dry?
In the oven at a low temperature. And then you're just crushing them up, whether, you know, with a mortar and pestle or food processor until it gets to be a fine powder.
Huh. Huh. That's so clever. I love it. And the tomato peels, I mean, those are, I'm sure they have tons of flavor in them. Because, you know, whenever I see a recipe that asks you to peel them, I'm like, oh, I like them. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't always peel them either. But for the few instances where you need to, like for canning tomatoes or whatever,
mm-hmm.
this one is actually one that was inspired by Gabriella Hamilton's cookbook Prune as well, because she makes straight tomato powder with them, which is obviously probably very useful in a restaurant, but perhaps
mm-hmm.
not as useful in a home kitchen. And so that was the inspiration for making all these different flavored salts.
Got it. So it's like a seasoning that could be used for anything and also have that tomato powder in it.
Yes.
This one is really, really clever. Corn cob yaki onigiri. So it's like grilled rice balls with corn cob stuff. How did you do that?
Well, you can get a lot of flavor, again, out of those corn cobs. So it works really great to save them up and make a corn broth that
mm-hmm.
then you could use for soup or for risotto. But in this case, I'm just cooking the rice along with the corn cobs. Mm-hmm. And so the rice is getting that flavor and the little bits of leftover flecks of corn. Mm-hmm. And so then that's, yeah, just being shaped into a rice ball and then lightly grilled on each side.
And I bet that has a lot of like sweetness in there and maybe some more starchiness from the corn cobs to lend to
them.
Super fun. Well, do you have any favorite you wanted to call out? As we're running out of time, so anyone.
That's a tough question. It's like choosing a favorite child, but for the season, I would say the pumpkin gut scones are pretty appropriate right now and make a good use of the part of the pumpkins that we're generally tossing. A lot of us might roast the seeds, but we don't always use those stringy fibers in between them.
I'm guilty of that for sure. Wow, that is a great tip right now. So while you're carving your pumpkins, I hope you pick up this book because it's just astounding. There's so many more we could talk about, but it looks like we're running out of time. So thank you so much, Lindsay Jean. This is like really, really fun book. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
Yeah. And thanks everyone at Heritage. And we'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.